Thank you all for joining us. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and this is April 1st, 2021. And what a time we're in here. So this is the Will Peace Satsang. Much love to you all. I really appreciate your efforts to help build a more compassionate society. And we'll go ahead and get started. There may be people joining us as we move along here, but Madeline and I have returned back to Northern California, and it's great to be back, I have to say. I'm able to sit here at the piano and play while we're doing the meditation, so I'll be doing that in a few minutes. So usually what we do on this call is a meditation at the beginning, and then I have a little reading that I'd like to share with you. This is from the Dhammapada again, and I think it's very appropriate for today because the title of this chapter, they're very short chapters in the Dhammapada, which is considered to be an authentic text of the old school of Buddhism, the Theravadin tradition. And the title of this chapter is The Fool, which I thought was great for April 1st. And there's a lot of irony involved, which we'll be talking about, I guess, perhaps. So feel free to just get comfortable, please. I set up the chat, so if there's any problem hearing me, just let me know. And also you can, certainly raise your hand and I can unmute you, or you can unmute yourself. Star 6, or just unmute yourself on your computer should do the job. But this first part is the meditation, so it's more introspective. And I'm really glad for this opportunity that we have once a month to deepen our connection through meditation together. Great. So we'll go ahead and get started. And this should all be working, hopefully, the piano sound. So let's begin our meditation. Just breathing. Breathing together. There's nothing more fundamental to our life than breathing. And so as we breathe together, we're connecting with each other, and we're connecting also with this beautiful earth and with all the human beings and all the animals who have breathed the same air for thousands, for millions of years. And we breathe in the oxygen, the life-giving oxygen given to us by our friends, the trees, the plants, the silent green witnesses to our whole human drama. Exhalation, we let go. Just letting go into this present moment. The breath. Connecting us to the infinite and the eternal. remembering that breathing has two complementary functions. One is the inhale, the divine feminine, swirling upward with every inhalation. Breathing in, taking it in, the infinite love and support of the universe for our life. And then we exhale, the divine masculine, the great outflowing of our life, creative urge, and sitting in peace and harmony, to be aware of our spine. With a straight spine, as best we can, we become aware of the central channel, the Sushumna Nadi, visualize the white light of infinite life moving up and down our spine, from the very heart of the universe. Light flows into the crown of our head, and so as we exhale, we just see the swirling white light flowing down our spine, all the way to the base of our spine. We see and we feel this white light swirling and rising up our spine, from the base of our spine to the crown of our head. We can practice this. And we pause at the top and at the bottom, and we pause at the top before we exhale. We visualize and feel this white light, essence of life, as we exhale, the light descends our spinal cord and fills up the reservoir at the base of our spine, and we rest for a moment. And as we inhale, this white light swirls up our spine,
crown. And we rest. And as we exhale, the white light swirls down our spine to the base of our spine again. And we rest for a moment and gather, and as we inhale, the light flows up our spine to our crown. And just do this on our own. That this light is activating our intuitive wisdom. It's activating all of the energy centers in our physical body. It's activating all of the power, joy, and freedom and wisdom. Mental body, in our emotional body, in our spiritual body, and we see our spine as a river of sacred activity, of light and power, of freedom, of wisdom and eternal life. The infinite feminine power swirling up. The infinite masculine power swirling down. Healing that is so urgent today. So we give thanks. for this precious opportunity to remember who we are, what we are, and to be part of the solution to the problems here on this earth. We give thanks for this precious moment, for the light that shines in every cell of our being, that swirls in every center, in all the chakras, as we activate our potential. We live in challenging times that calls forth the best from us, and that everything that we have gone through in this lifetime, in all of our lifetimes, brings us to this moment. We are ready to serve. Great cause of liberation for all living beings. We are all completely interconnected in all of our relations. Breathing and radiating love into every aspect of our life, to everyone in our life, every dimension of ourself, breathing and radiating love to the entire web of relations on this earth, abiding in love, abiding and breathing compassion every dimension of our life, into all of our relations, to all living beings. Doing their best to fulfill their potential, to heal the wounds, to awaken to the truth that they are, to see the true face of being. Joy, the truth of infinite joy into all dimensions of our life, connecting with the truth that our core is a bubbling spring of joy that needs no reasons, abiding in the joy that is fundamental, that flows through every dimension of this universe. Abiding in peace, breathing, relaxing into this moment, filled with gratitude, the harmony flows through all of our systems, through our mind and heart, through our physical body, the tremendous wisdom that is serving us right now, is activating and regulating all of our internal organs, harmonizing all of the systems of this earth,
of the entire cosmos. There is one power, the love that is the source of our life, the source of all life. So we abide now in the awareness of our life. It is an expression of love. And we give thanks for ourself, to ourself, for the unique and beautiful being that we are. Give thanks to ourselves for taking time out of our busy schedules to be here right now, to contribute to this field of awareness, to allow the divine, eternal feminine power of love and nurturing to dance within us, with the infinite and eternal divine masculine power of creative expression. And to bring this into our life for the benefit of all living beings. We especially send our love now to all of the animals of this earth, knowing that they are expressions of the infinite love of this universe. May they be recognized for what they are, may we humans awaken to the truth that we are and liberate ourselves, may we liberate animals, may we continue to work together to build a more enlightened society. A world that cares for and understands all beings beyond materialist delusion to the wisdom of the heart. We give thanks knowing that we are right now and always part of the awakening of humanity as we move through a birthing process of purification process. To discover true face beyond the illusions of separation, we give thanks knowing this is so, and so it is. Thank you, everyone, for Again, participating in our meditation time. It's a really an honor to be able to share this kind of meeting together. I'm delighted that we can do that, especially as I was saying in the meditation during what I think we all feel at some fundamental level is a time of great challenge for humanity and for animals and for our earth. So it's really important, I think, to make every effort to be cognizant of our true nature and not be hoodwinked or fooled or deceived by the appearances that very often seem so real and the fear that is being just pumped in a massive way into our society right now. So much love to you, and I really appreciate your commitment to not only spirituality, but to building a world of compassion for animals and for all of us. It's such an important thing right now, and to see these interconnections, I think, is crucial. I'd like to do a short reading. April 1st is colloquially known as April Fool's Day. I'm sure it has very interesting roots. I haven't really explored the roots of April Fool's Day, where it comes from. But, you know, I always think of that wonderful song. I just love the song by the Beatles, The Fool on the Hill. And the lyrics of that song are so spectacular. You know, the fool on the hill, they don't like him, the fool on the hill. He's the enlightened sage, really. You know, he's represents all of us, I think, in our true nature. When we awaken, we're in the world, but we're not of the world anymore. And so, of course, we're considered the fool from the worldly point of view. But the fool is actually has tremendous wisdom, and we can all learn from that. Of course, on another level, the fool is simply the opposite of that, the ignorant one who's making mistakes over and over again and hopefully learning from those mistakes. So it has this double meaning. And I'd like to just go ahead and read this short chapter from the Dhammapada, chapter 5. It's so ironic because today actually was I'm reading it now for about the fifth time, I think. And I just happened to read The Fool today. It just came up, so it's kind of perfect on April 1st. So just by chance, by coincidence, right, which is no coincidences. So this is how it goes, and I'll maybe make a few comments. And if you have any questions or comments, feel free to raise your hand or make a comment. Night is long for one lying awake. 7 miles is long for one exhausted. Samsara is long for fools, ignorant of the true Dharma. So that's kind of the key point. Samsara is conditioned existence. It's the state of mind where we're under delusion and we think we're separate. And so we're constantly struggling to compete and present ourselves and escape and change and get angry and desire and want this and want that. And so our mind is continually befuddled and upset, no matter how much money we have or whatever it is. That's the state of samsara. So the whole idea here in a spiritual path is to awaken out of samsara, which is the true Dharma. Dharma here means the teaching or the way, the path. If while on your way you meet no one your equal or better, steadily continue on your way alone. There is no fellowship with fools. So this is a theme that we've heard before, I think, that it's really important for us to be careful who we're associating with. We should always, of course, try to help everyone around us. But the idea is to create communities of sanity with people who have similar interests, who are working to awaken also. Otherwise, just stay on your own. You're better off.
there is no fellowship with fools. I mean, there's a really profound meaning in that, I think. A fool suffers thinking, I have children, I have wealth. One's self is not even one's own. How then are children? How then is wealth? So, of course, that's a fundamental teaching in the Buddhist Dharma, that essentially there is no such thing as a fundamentally separate self. And that's the main ignorance. So when we look deeply in meditation, if we quiet the mind enough, we begin to realize that pure awareness is witnessing and arising that just has a lot of thoughts spinning around this concept of a me, which is different from others around me. And so I'm always trying to protect myself and get what I want and keep away what I don't want. And who is this I that is always engaged in that struggle? That's the question. And when we look deeply, we see in many ways it's a figment of our imagination. It's actually it's a collection of memories and ideas and concepts. To discover our true nature, that's what in Zen is referred to as our true face, our original face. That is the work of a lifetime or of many lifetimes. And of course, the demonic powers of delusion, the one thing they want to do is cover up our face. That's why the power of the mask is so damaging, because it's working at a very deep level to keep us separate from our true nature. So to discover our true nature, our true face, our original face, what is it? Not just being this mask. I love the word mask because it actually comes from the word, in the Greek word for mask actually is persona. Per meaning through and sona meaning sound. So you speak through the mask, the persona, the personality, the persona. I'm Will Tuttle and I did this and I did that and here I am and this is my persona, this is my mask, right? We're infatuated with our mask. That's what he's saying is the fool. I have children, I have wealth, I have all these accomplishments, I have these sicknesses, I have these problems, I have. If you don't even have yourself, how can you have all these things? Who is it that has these concepts? That's the question. What is it? And only, I think, by quieting our minds and continuing to dig deeper into these questions do we find liberation from the endless delusion that seems to bring us into fear of each other and of our life. And so this is what he's pointing at here, I think, with this idea. And so it goes on, a fool conscious of her foolishness is to that extent wise. But a fool who considers himself wise is the one to be called a fool. In this translation, by the way, the translator, Gil Fronsdale, instead of always saying he, which is what it says, I think, in the original, way back 2,000 years ago, he sometimes says she, sometimes he. So a fool conscious of her foolishness is to that extent wise. So that's the key point. And one who thinks, a fool who considers himself wise is the one to be called a fool. I think we can all see what that's pointing at. A fool associating with a sage, even if for a lifetime, will no more perceive the Dharma than a spoon will perceive the taste of soup. A discerning person who associates with a sage, even if for a brief moment, will quickly perceive the Dharma as the tongue perceives the taste of soup. So this is another key point. It's the quality of our awareness. How sensitive are we to the truth? How discerning are we? Are we gullible and we just believe things that are not true? Or are we able to taste the truth? What is it that gives us the power to discern right truth from falsehood? That's a very key point. And so fools with no sense go about as their own enemies, doing evil deeds that bear bitter fruit. No deed is good that one regrets having done, that results in weeping and a tear-streaked face. A deed is good that one doesn't regret having done, that results in joy and delight. Okay, so this is what I call the boomerang effect. What we're sowing, we're reaping.
And how do we really know what we're doing? That's another very deep question. And he goes on here, I think, very interestingly. As long as evil has not borne fruit, the fool thinks it is like honey. But when evil does bear fruit, then the fool suffers. So that's the whole point. Things don't necessarily bear fruit instantaneously. Sometimes it takes a few minutes or a few days, a few months, a few weeks, a few years, a few lifetimes. But everything will bear its fruit. This is the underlying teaching here. And you can believe it or not. It's something we can all test out in our own experience, I think. But what he's saying here, I think, is this basic idea that in our society, I think, really helps us to, or maybe I should say hinders us from understanding this. It helps us to not realize this. Very often, the people who are the most, in a sense, harmful, accumulate the most wealth and are praised the most, but who knows what their next life will be like, right? So, again, to understand about things take a while sometimes for the fruit to appear, as gardeners are well aware. The foolish ascetic who month after month eats food with the tip of a blade of grass is not worth a fraction of a person who has fathomed the Dharma. Like fresh milk, evil deeds do not immediately curdle. Rather, like fire covered with ash, they follow the fool smoldering. Basically the same idea. Reasoning is harmful to fools. It ruins their good fortune and splits open their heads. So he's talking here that very often rationality can be a really good, rationality and logic can be very helpful, but very often it's lost on people, on us, if we're not being conscious and aware, and we want to continue with our conditioned behavior. And then finally, we're getting toward the end here. Fools will want unwarranted status, deference from fellow monks, authority in the monasteries, and homage from good families. Let both householders and renunciates believe that I did this. Let them obey me in every task. Such are the thoughts of a fool who cultivates desire and pride. The way to material gain is one thing, the path to nirvana is another. That kind of sums the whole thing up. You know, the same thing that I think we've heard Jesus saying, right? That, you know, wide is the gate that leads to riches and so forth, but very narrow is the gate that leads to the kingdom of heaven. It's the same idea. The way to material gain is one thing, and this is, of course, is what very often we're pressured into moving in that direction. However, the path to nirvana is another. Nirvana simply means, it literally means extinguishment. It means extinguishing the delusion. And when that happens, there is tremendous liberation and joy, and it's beyond words. Knowing this, a monk who is the Buddha's disciple should not delight in being venerated, but cultivate solitude instead. So that's the end. So cultivating solitude here doesn't necessarily mean, you know, going off and being alone in the woods, although that's something that's somewhat considered desirable at that time, and it perhaps even still is today. There's something to be said for reducing the numbers of distractions that we have. But the point I think he's making here is more of a figurative one, that rather than being, what's the good word? I guess it's sort of like tantalized and distracted by so many outer things that every day goes by and we don't have time to recollect and remember and focus on the deeper questions of life, that it's good to be alone. Alone with our mind, alone with our question, how do we live? What is our purpose? What are we actually? And I think as we authentically embrace these questions and make an effort to live this in our outer life, then we authentically become a force for healing in the world and for awakening. So this is where I think veganism and spirituality come together. They come together in the understanding that nonviolence, true nonviolence, can only come through a being who is awake. Because otherwise, there's always the toxins of this sense of a separate self. And I want to get approval. I want to be recognized. I want other people to do things the way I want them to do them. I want to manipulate, so forth, which always creates more suffering and delusion. So the idea is to do our best to do the inner work so that then as we do whatever it is ours to do. And the beautiful thing here is that this does not in any way reduce our individuality, the unique being expression that we are. That's an important point. A lot of people say, well, if there is no self, then I'm just a glob, you know. No, you're a unique flower, a very unique, beautiful expression. Each one of us is, but the problem is we kind of contract around being this outer mask, you know, the mask, the persona. It's so interesting what's happening right now in the world with this mask thing, I tell you. So, we tend to identify with that, and we don't really see the true beauty that we are. It's very interesting. I remember when I was a Zen monk in Korea, you know, everybody, all these monks were really working hard with these questions of what am I, and being in many ways as humble and just introspective as possible. And yet you couldn't imagine more vivid personalities in a sense. I mean, they were like, each one was so much more unique that nobody, there's like this loss of the yearning to conform, to be like other people. You know, it's like, that's ridiculous. I mean, you know, that the ego very often is always comparing itself to others and wants to be like them or wants to be different. But all of that is based on this, again, this delusion of not understanding our original face, not actually seeing it. So we have to take off so many different masks today, and I think that's the great challenge, to get to the being who's at the core of all of this. It's taking off layers. And this is, I think, really what's coming right now more than ever. I mean, we're seeing in the outer world just a relentless, I think in many ways, an relentless increase in a dangerous situation of loss of freedom and basic human rights. And yet there's, I think, at a deeper level, an upwelling of human consciousness and of compassion and awareness and an arising of the sacred feminine that does not want any part of violence and abuse of other beings. And so I think the vegan movement in many ways is really the key to this whole thing. Veganism not as merely an outer practice of buy this and don't buy that, but a practice of knowing that we all have the same source. I mean, understanding that at a deep level. And when we understand that at a deep level, we really, I think in a certain sense, we lose the fear of death. And it's the fear of being extinguished. I think that the separate self always has. And when we realize on some level that actually there isn't any separate self to begin with, then the true self begins to express itself. And this is something that I don't think we can ever teach. We can't learn it. It's something that comes as we walk our path and go through our life together. So does anyone have any thoughts? We have some time here, it looks like, before we'd like to keep this call to about an hour. And like I say, it's April Fool's Day. And so the Buddha in the Dhammapada, of course, is talking about someone whose mind is lost in ignorance and delusion, who thinks that they are a fundamentally separate self, and whose the winds are blowing across their mind, and they're trying to get this and avoid that, and afraid of this and afraid of that, and believing this and believing that. And so, there's another, as I was saying earlier, there's another dimension, another meaning to the fool, like the Beatles, in the Beatles song, The Fool on the Hill, where the fool is actually the enlightened sage who appears to be a fool to all of those who are down grubbing for money and so forth, basically trying to survive. And he's looking at all of that, and the eyes in his head spin around. And I think we all have that aspect where we can, in a sense, detach a little bit from the hysteria in many ways that is sort of raging through our society right now. One of the psychologists in Southern California refers to it as a mass psychotic delusion that's sort of raging through our society. And to find inner peace in the midst of all of this, and to look with love and compassion and kindness and respect to all the other human beings, to especially the animals, and to keep living our life as an expression of kindness. It's really, I think, harder now than it has been. Now that we've been, you know, a whole year going through quite a change in the way we can travel and see each other, and not even see each other, and so forth. So, this is from my point of view, this call is a time for us to reconnect with the eternal truths that come back. That when we leave the stage here, like Shakespeare, kept saying that the world is a stage, and so when we leave the stage, which we all will do, maybe in a few years or a few days or a few decades, we don't know when, but we're definitely going to leave this worldly stage. And we're reflecting back on our lifetime, and maybe we're talking to each other, backstage, how it always is. It's so great. I love that metaphor of, after a play, and on the play, there's a protagonist, there's an antagonist, there's all these other people, a rabble, the crowd, and they're fighting with each other, and they're in love, and whatever they're doing. And then the play's over, and they all go backstage, and they all say, "Hey, you did a great job of that, and how you played your role there." And you realize that that's what it was. So we're, in a sense, we are in a life where we're here to learn and with each other. And those who may seem to be our enemies may be our friends, and those who seem to be our friends and may not actually. They may be in some ways harming us. We don't know. I mean, ultimately, we can't be harmed. But to act, the whole idea with what's happening right now on this planet is inversion. Everything is inverted. I've been saying this for decades, that animal agriculture is the great inversion. What is portrayed as good and healthy and patriotic and whatever, meat, dairy, and eggs, is the opposite. It's destructive and harmful and miserable. And we have to learn to see that in so many other aspects. The media is portrayed as giving us the truth, and we can go on and on. Commerce and banking and government and medicine and so many things, that to be able to see clearly through the inversions and to support each other, I think. And a lot of people, of course, are not at that point, but to do the best we can to keep our own minds clear. All right. So, feel free to raise your hand if you have any comments or questions. And it's also fine, from my point of view, if we just hang out together and without going through questions. But I like to give that opportunity if there are any. And it's beautiful to see your names. Some of you, I have your videos turned off, and that's totally cool. And some of you, I can see there, and I send my love to you all over, scattered around different parts of planet Earth. It's amazing to think what it is that brings us together. And Madeline's right here. She's just a few feet away, making something for dinner and listening to all this. And So she sends her love, I know, too. So anyway, I don't know if any of this is helpful, but I'm hoping that just by reflecting upon this time and our own unique individual path, our unique individual perspective on this, that we can support each other in taking off the masks of delusion. So, Susan, you have a comment or question?
Well, it was really helpful, because it's a tough concept about when we leave this stage. And yesterday or the day before yesterday, I listened to a webinar that Zach Bush, MD, had with a number of another doctor, a colleague of his that's like also triple board certified, and then two women that were death doulas. But Zach is just, you know, very clear that the end of our of this life is like they say, a transition, and that the people, you know, because he worked in hospice so much, and he said, you know, the people come back and they just say, there's nothing to be afraid of.
Right.
And anyway, so the things you said really connected well and helped. I could listen to that a lot more to get to understand it.
Great. Well, thanks, Susan. Yeah, I agree. I think I've heard Zach Bush. He was interviewed by Rich Roll, and he talked about his time working with people who are dying and how there's a transition that happens that he sometimes could see there, that where there's a realization that what we are is not just this body. And we can have this awareness, I think. I think through meditation or in other ways, we can somehow have the experience of our consciousness not being confined merely to this physical body. And I think that's one of the biggest impediments, really, to happiness and to healthy relationships, is the over-identification with the physical body. We tend, we want our body to be this and that, and it should be presentable, and, you know, we have all these things we put, and we identify with, it's like identifying with my car. You know, I swear I see people that are so identified with their cars, even, like if you dent their car, it's like you've just dented them, you know. You're not your car. And it's the same thing, we have this vehicle, and we tend to really identify with it. And if we ever have an experience, some people have had this experience. I had it a little bit after a long meditation retreat. I just went up, you know, I like went up out of my body, and I looked down, and I
wow,
myself, you know, like walking around down there. And so it was like obvious. But it's these kinds of things are just so discouraged in our society. Everything, you know, we're just bombarded with messages that try to keep us deluded that what we are is this body, and we have, and the only thing that matters is, you know, we're willing to kill animals. Like right now, I mean, there's all these new drugs coming on the market. We're killing animals, testing on animals, causing all this misery to them, to get medications for us, right? I mean, and these toxic medications, most of them are horrible. So it's such a huge delusion, yet we're bombarded with messages that this is progress, this is science, this is some kind of great thing. So it's a huge inversion, and it's all based on really a delusion, I could say a demonic or satanic delusion, in the sense that I think perhaps there is some kind of real effort being made to keep humanity down in an exploited, oppressed state, but maybe not. Maybe it's just our delusion that's doing that. But in any event, we have this great opportunity, I think, right now, because I think this time, this is unprecedented. I mean, everywhere we go, people are wearing masks. I mean, this is like unbelievable to me. I still can't believe it. I still pinch myself. And think, you know, I mean, I'm just watching movies from last year. Madeline shows me these ice skating, you know, and people are skating and the people in the stands are cheering and everything. And now the new ice skating ones, there's nobody in the stands and everybody's wearing a mask. And as soon as they get off the ice, they have to put a mask on. I mean, what in the future, can you imagine the movies they'll make about 2020 and 2021 and how people, I mean, how is it possible that healthy people are told to wear masks? I'm totally amazed that we're going along with all this. But in any event, this attack, this is really, I think, the greatest attack on human, on humanity and on the earth, probably thousands of years, and we're here for it. So it's really important, I think, for us to dig deep and get to the root of our connection with the eternal life that we are, so that for this lifetime, for the days and weeks and years that we have left, however much that is, we're actually contributing as best we can to the healing and the awakening of humanity and not being part of the problem. I think that's what veganism has always been. It's always been being part of the solution rather than being part of the problem. And that's why veganism, I've always felt this way and tried to teach this, that it's not merely an outer set of behaviors, set of protocols. I mean, protocols to me are like the enemy of everything. All these doctors and everybody just following protocols that are given by technocrats and enslaving all of us, right? So it's not about protocols. It's about the living spirit of love and awareness and freedom and being contagious. I just love that idea. You know, I am super contagious. Anyone who gets within a few thousand miles of me is going to get radiantly healthy and happy. we have to realize that, you know, we're not each other's enemies. We're each other's teachers and allies, and we send love out with every breath, and we radiate our true nature, our original face. So thank you all so much for joining us. It's really been wonderful. It's about time here to close. I think what I'd like to do is perhaps just close with a short piece of music. And there was a melody. I wonder if I could play that melody. I wrote it down. It was a nice melody when Madeline and I were with my mother. This melody came, you know, I was playing the piano for her. She's still alive, by the way. She's still actually doing pretty well. We thought she was going to pass away any minute, but we're still talking to her on the phone now. We're back in California. But this was, I have written down Mom's Breathing piece. It's in B flat. And, you know, I think that the power of the mother, it's almost infinite to really think of the love of the mother principle, of just nurturing and caring and allowing this fruit that has come forth from one's own being to love that and let it go free and to become whatever it is to become, to support that. I mean, there's something incredibly beautiful there. So here's, I'll just play, it's very short. This is the piece that came at my mother's in Florida. Much love to all of you again. Much love to all the mothers of all beings. And I'm looking forward to seeing you again in the first Thursday of May. And of course, we have our third Thursday coming up later on this month. And so let's maybe just close our time with our prayer from the circle of compassion that we like to say. We can say it together. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. Say it again. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. And one more time. Compassion encircles the earth for all
beings everywhere.
All right, so keep the energy going. Much love to you all, and go forth and multiply this message. And if there's anything I can do to be of any assistance, just let me know. Send me an email. Madeline and I we're here, and we're available. So much love to all of you, and thanks again for all the efforts that you're making. Each and every one of you is a beautiful, radiating center of power and light, and I'm really grateful to know you all. So thanks again, and we'll look forward to next time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'll put the recording of this up.
Peace to you.